أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونستهديه، ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا. من يهدي الله فلا مضل له، ومن يهدي فلا، ومن يضلل فلا هادي له. ونشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، ونشهد أن محمدًا عبده ورسوله. سيد المرسلين وخاتم النبيين ورحمة للعالمين، وصلى الله على آله الطاهرين الذين أذهب الله عنهم الرجس وطهرهم تطهيرا. أوصيكم عباد الله ونفسي بتقوى الله. We hear sometimes people saying that Islam is outdated and we should be moving with the times. This is a whole, you know, discussion by itself. Shahid Murtaza, Shahid Mutahiri has a very interesting comment for it, and we'll talk about it some other time. So we are told that, you know, the current, we should just go with the current liberal thoughts. And it's assumed that the current thoughts are automatically based on scientific knowledge. We should realize that many, many decisions are made in the Western society which are not necessarily supported by science or any data or discussion. Rather, it actually is based on the lobby groups. You know, if you, in some cases, actually, the scientific data is suppressed in order to promote their own agendas. And I think the most obvious example would be example of this whole debate in the United States of America going on for more than 20 years about restricting the dangerous, you know, guns and things like that. I don't know how many more massacres they would like to see, you know, in the schools, high schools, elementary schools, in shopping malls and different places. Things are so obvious, yet, you know, the presidents come, make the promise, they are not able to pass the laws in the Congress or the Senate. And this is everything to do with the lobby groups rather than the issue of, you know, proper study of the issues based on the data. One of those examples that we see is the issue of smoking and drinking. When it comes to smoking, this is relatively a new thing. And therefore, you will see that in the Quran and the Hadith, we really don't have anything about smoking. And therefore, till lately, you know, the opinion of the mujtahideen was that there is no ayat about it, no hadith about it, and therefore it is, and there was no scientific study about it to say that it's harmful, they said it's jais. But now that things have changed, even the fatwa are gradually moving towards prohibition. But if you look at it, you'll see that even though the harm of smoking is known, and they are actually, they're still allowing it to be, you know, sold, but they put warnings on the packages. Some of them say, Surgeon General's warning, smoking by a pregnant woman may result in fetal injury, premature birth, and low birth weight. Some of them say smoking can cause heart disease and strokes by clogging arteries. And some actually say cigarettes cause fetal lung disease. So at least on the issue of smoking, you know, although it's still allowed here in this society, but they are putting warnings on the products themselves. But when it comes to alcohol, which has been there for centuries, before Islam, before Christianity, before even Judaism. And yet, you know, its social ills are visible. You know, what people do when they are drunk. especially when it comes to the family life and, you know, abuse and violence in the family, and many, many other things, many crimes committed because of that. And yet none of these modern societies have even, you know, moved towards restricting that. Again, it's the lobby. You know, there was a time where it was being promoted that, oh, according to the science, you know, especially if you look at the Mediterranean diet, you know, people in that region, they have less heart problems because they regularly drink red wine. So a little bit of it is actually good for your heart. Until World Health Organization came against it. And interestingly, their statement, and this is more than 15 years ago, they said that this is not true at all, and it's better, you know, it's better if you don't drink at all. This is what we have been saying in Islam from the very beginning. But of course, that never reached to the level of legislation. There was a report this week issued by Canadian Center on Substance Use and Addiction, which also became a news item this week, where they are saying that, you know, that previously there was a guideline given by this association, where there was recommended that men drink no more than 15 standard drinks per week, and women drink no more than 10 standard, you know, drinks per week. Once you start drinking, do you keep account of it? Anyway, but now they are saying that was the guidelines that they had previously. Based on the new estimations, these levels of alcohol use are not consistent with the evidence and acceptable risk thresholds. And so what are they saying? They are saying people who use these guidelines in the past as a marker of risk may have experienced substantially more harm than original thought. This is still just, you know, a study which has come out. We don't know what will happen as far as, you know, implementation is concerned. But this is what I would say. You know, Islam is not outdated. Let the world catch up with Islam. It took them 14 centuries to reach to this point. And you will see, the more studies come up, they will come to that point where Islam had mentioned this 1400 years ago. Salawat. In Surah Ma'idah, ayat number 90 and 91, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala revealed the final verdict about khamr, intoxication. You see, because this was a serious problem in the Meccan society and Medina also, in the among the Arabs. And so it could not be just struck down by one executive order. It came gradually. There are 3 to 4 ayat. You know, for example, we hear about this ayat which says, you know, لَا تَقْرُبُوا الصَّلَاةُ وَأَنْتُمْ سُكَارَى. You know, don't go for the prayers while you are drunk. But this is the early days where salat was wajib, but drinking was not totally forbidden. But they were told that at least in namaz, make sure you don't stand up on the musalla drunk. Gradually the ayat came in, and the final ayat in Surah Ma'idah is one of the last surahs to be revealed, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا إِنَّمَا الْخَمْرُ وَالْمَيْسَرُ وَالْأَنْصَابُ وَالْأَزْلَامُ رِجْسٌ مِّنْ عَمَلِ الشَّيْطَانِ. That all you who believe, khamr, intoxicants, and gambling, and ansab and azlam, these are methods of, you know, gambling those days. Rijsun, rijs, close to najis. This is abomination from the deeds of the shaitan. This is an action of shaitan. Fashtanibuhu. Therefore, stay away from it. Very clear. La'allakum tuflihun, so that you may gain success in the hereafter. And then the next ayah talks about the ills of alcohol and shaitan's role in using that. to create problems in society. إنما يريد الشيطان أن يوقع بينكم العداوة والبغضاء في الخمر والميسر. It is a shaitan who wants to create animosity, hatred among you through intoxication and gambling. You know how many family lives and marriages have ended because of intoxication and gambling. And this is shaitans coming in. وَيَصُدُّكُمْ عَنْ ذِكْرِ اللَّهِ. And that is a social issue, but on a personal level, Quran says that shaitan uses this to prevent you from remembering Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and especially an salat, from the prayers. فَهَلْ أَنْتُمْ مُنْتَهُونَ. Are you going to refrain from this or not? And so this is the final verdict that which came. Let me just put it in a slightly different way. You see, the airlines, the way they fly now, you know, it is in the when the planes take off and when they land, the pilots have to be there, fully alert. But once they reach to an altitude where they are going to fly and they have fixed the plane in the direction, then it goes on autopilot, where they don't have to worry about all the, you know, details of monitoring what's going on. Khamr is the autopilot used by shaitan. Alcohol. Once he puts a person, you know, into this addiction of alcohol, intoxication, this is autopilot destination Jahannam. He doesn't have to then worry about that individual. Otherwise, he has to stop one from namaz and then salat and then zakat and then, you know, being kind to the parents or, you know, kind to the family. And so this is where we have to realize that this is a serious issue. And the world, inshallah, will come around to that opinion that Islam has. As far as the Shia, who might have been trapped by the shaitan in this addiction of intoxication, since we are in the days of, you know, Azaf Sayyid al-Shuhada. I'm just trying to paraphrase a statement from the 8th Imam where he says, a Shia who is addicted to this should remember the time when the family of Hussein were presented in the Darbar of Yazid. Remember, you must be hearing those incidents now, where the Mal'oon had the head of Imam Hussain alayhi salam on a gold plate by his seat, and he had a cup of wine, khamr. And he was actually allowing some drops to drip on that blessed face of Hussain ibn Ali. A Shia, even if non-practicing, even if he doesn't show on the day of Eid, he will surely show up on the day of Ashura. If somebody is in this addiction of khamr, he should remember that scene. A hand which stands up for matam and latmiyah cannot be the hand which holds the cup of wine or beer. And that will be the strongest way of, you know, getting out of this addiction and this trap of the shaitan, inshallah. Remember Imam Hussain alayhi salam in his very first statement on this movement of Karbala in Medina, responding to Walid, the governor of Yazid, the way he says, why I would not pledge allegiance to Yazid. One of the description that he has for Yazid, he says, وَيَزِيدَ رَجُلٌ فَاسِقٌ. Yazid is a sinful person, شَارِبُ الْخَمْرِ. He is a drunkard. Those are the qualities of shaitan. These are the actual attributes of Yazid. And an azadar of Sayyid al-Shuhada, a Shia of Ali, cannot have those kinds of qualities and attributes. إن أحسن الحديث كتاب الله العزيز بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والعصر إن الإنسان لفي خسر إلا الذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات وتواصوا بالحق وتواصوا بالصبر. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله الذي لا إله إلا هو الحليم الكريم، غافر الذنب وقابل التوبة وهو الغفور الرحيم. ونشهد أن لا إله إلا هو العطوف العباد بجوده والعواد على المضربين بحلمه. ونشهد أن محمدًا نبيه وحبيبه. سيد المرسلين وشفيع المضربين ورحمة للعالمين، صلى الله عليه وآله الداعين إلى سبيل الله بالحكمة والموعظة الحسنة، قادة الأمم وأولياء النعمة ومعدن الرحمة. أوصيكم عباد الله بتوبة ما سلف من ذنوبكم. In the second khutbah, I would like to talk about an important concept. And I would like to begin with the words of Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salatu wa salam. Inna hi balagha, in saying number 149, he says, Halaka al-mar'u lam ya'rifu qadra. He who does not know his own worth and limits is ruined. In khutbah number 103, he talks about this in a different way when he says, Al-alimu man arifa qadru wa kafa bil mar'i jahlan an la ya'rifu qadru. He says, a learned person is a person who knows his worth and limits. It is enough for a person to remain ignorant if he does not know his worth and his limits. According to the commentators of Nahj al-Balagha, there are two different ways of looking at this word qadr. And that's why I've given you two translations here, worth and limits. At two different levels, you can explain it in different way, but the majority of them say that looking at the context of the words, it actually means knowing one's limits. When a person forgets or ignores his limits, then there is chaos and problems in society. Previously, I talked about these issues and I have used the example of the medical field of knowledge, where I said that people actually go for training for different, sections of medical field. You have people who go for nursing to become nurse. You have people who go for pharmacy to become pharmacist. And those who come from the medical school, when they are licensed to practice, then you have family physicians. And then above them you have specialists, where the family physicians will send you to the specialist. And even among the specialists, there are those who do their own research and also teach at the medical schools. All of them are from the same field, but they are different levels. And this is where we are saying every person should know their own level. A pharmacist cannot act like a doctor. A nurse cannot become a pharmacist. A family physician, if he doesn't know the issues, he cannot just, decide on his own or in her own. They will send you to the specialist. And this is where, when we look at the religious field of knowledge, especially when it comes to fiqh and jurisprudence, there are three levels, very general, I'm talking about, and this is not really an academic discussion as such. The highest level is what we call marja taqleed, the senior most mujtahid or the mujtahideen of that level, who issue verdicts, who give fatwas on judicial matters. And their muqallideen follow them. So they are at the highest level. Then you have the second tier of the field of religious knowledge. These are the senior ulama, I'm just simplifying the terms here, who actually are in the most advanced hawza religious seminaries in Najaf and Qom, and they actually teach and train the mujtahideen, but they do not issue fatwas. They have their own opinions, but they have not yet taken on the responsibility of issuing fatwa and asking people to follow their opinion. Although they are just one level below the maraj al-taqleed. And those are the people actually, you know, in the common term these days, the problem, you know, we don't really have a proper global body in Qom, even in Najaf or Qom, who would specify which title is to be used for whom. MashaAllah, anyone who has a social media, you know, page, they have their own alqabat and titles, whether they are qualified or not. You know, normally in a very strictly Hawzawi system, Ayatullah al-Uzma, the grand Ayatullah, is used only for those who are maraji'. And those who are at the second level, who actually teach their sakharij, who train mujtahideen, although they do not issue fatwas. Not that they don't have their own opinions, but they have not yet taken on this responsibility of giving fatwas. Those are the ones we call them Ayatullah. And then you have all other titles. So you have Ayatullah, and then you have Ayatullahul Uzma. And so the third level, I would say, I would cover the whole group of the ulama and the, you know, scholars in general, from authors and writers to orators and speakers and the imam of the masajid and the muballighin. In the modern psychology, when they study about the society, they use different terms. I would like to share it with you, especially when I was studying about the environment in Egypt in the early 20th century. When it comes to the maraj taqleed and the senior ulama who are training mujtahideen, you know, we can use this term from the Western sociologist who say these are the primary intellectuals. And what do they mean by that? I mean, these are the ones who formulate opinions on religious issues based on their thorough research and study. And the third group basically would be the secondary intellectuals, whose function is actually to disseminate and spread the ideas of the primary intellectuals. The problem is when then the secondary intellectuals do not know their limits and try to assume the position of the primary intellectuals. And this is where we are to realize, you know, that if everyone there in that levels, especially the third level, if they know their own limits, then there is stability and growth in the community. But when the secondary intellectuals forget their limits, go out of the limit, then there is disharmony and confusion in the community. Let me give you just one example of what we are talking about when we talk about knowing the limits. You have the example of the senior most marja of our time, the Grand Ayatollah Sayyid Ali al-Sistani. When the issue of cryptocurrency came up first, and when he was asked about it, he said, because there is ambiguity about it, and there are unknown, you know, risk attached to it at the moment, so he says the initial fatwa of him was, it is haram. Almost a year and a half ago, he said that because this ambiguity about cryptocurrency and the problems attached with it are still continuing, He then said that I reserve my opinion and my judgment. And I asked my followers to follow the second best mujtahid who has a clear opinion on this issue. And there is no one who has said yes. I know you're waiting for that. No, there is no opinion among the top level of Maraja who would say cryptocurrency is okay. We're still waiting for the major governments of the world, for their central banks to recognize it. Only then it will reach to the level of, you know, Orfan, it will be acceptable. And then you will see the opinion will change. Just before Muharram, I'd send the question again to the office of Ayatollah Sistani in Najaf, that is your opinion still that you don't have an opinion, or have you changed on this issue? He said, no, it's still the same. So you have a grand Ayatollah of the time who exercise precaution on these issues. And this is where you have to realize when Amir al-Mu'mineen says, you know, a sign of an alim that they know their limitations. And this is where, you know, when we talk about issuing verdicts and opinions, those who are on the secondary intellectual level, their function and role in the society is to spread and explain and elaborate on the views of the primary intellectuals, not come up with their own uncooked, you know, ideas. And this word uncooked is actually from a very different context in a discussion with Ayatollah Sistani. Because you had to be qualified before you give your own opinion. And by the way, when it comes to the issue that who will decide the next marja or the list of the next marja, it is the senior ulama who teach darsa kharij, who train mujtahideen. They are the people known as Ahl al-Khibra, the experts who will identify an individual or a number of individuals who would be worthy of being following by the Shia community. So let us understand these issues. Otherwise, we will get into disharmony and confusion in the community. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala give us the tawfiq to understand the wisdom of our deen and madhab, inshallah. اللهم صل على سيد المرسلين وشفيع المذنبين نبينا محمد صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم وعلى إمام المتقين وأمير المؤمنين علي بن أبي طالب صلوات الله عليه وعلى سيدة نساء العالمين سيدتنا فاطمة بنت رسول الله صلوات الله عليها وعلى سيد الشباب أهل الجنة الحسن المجتبى والحسين الشهيد بكربلاء عليهم الصلاة والسلام وعلى أئمة المسلمين علي بن الحسين ومحمد بن علي وجعفر بن محمد وموسى بن جعفر وعلي بن موسى ومحمد بن علي وعلي بن محمد والحسن بن علي عليهم الصلاة والسلام اللهم صل على مولانا الحجة بن الحسن صاحب العصر والزمان محيا أصار البدو والتغيان هادم يا أبنية الشرك ونفاق حاسد فر البغي والشقاق صلوات الله وسلامه عليه وعلى آباء الكرام ما اتصلت الليالي والأيام اللهم عجل فرج وصح المخرج واكحل ناظرنا بنظرة منا إليه واجعلنا من المستشهدين بين يديه اللهم اجعلنا ممن يذكر فتنفعه الذكرى إن الله يعمر بالعدل والإحسان وإيتاء ذي القربى وينحى عن الفحشاء والمنكر والبغي يعظكم لعلكم تذكرون